Okay, our next case is Cranford v. McDonough, 21-1973. Mr. Dohakis, you reserve, is it 3 or 4 minutes for rebuttal?
3 minutes, Your Honor.
3 minutes. Okay, you may begin, sir.
Thank you. May it please the Court, on behalf of Mr. Cranford, I thank this Court for the opportunity to present his appeal. This appeal presents this Court with a pure question of regulatory interpretation. Mr. Cranford does not challenge the VA's authority to promulgate Section 3.12.
Can I ask you this?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are we talking about a difference in the composition of the group or just what the group is named?
The name of it, Your Honor.
So the VA doesn't have control over what the armed services titles or discharges, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So in your view, every time the armed service changed the name of the discharge that applied to this group, until VA catches up through whatever administrative procedure they have, and sometimes it takes a long time, the people under the new armed services name would somehow become eligible, even though they're in the exact same group.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. In this case, yes. The VA has many tools at its disposal.
No. But isn't that the thrust of your argument, is if all we look at is the name, if tomorrow they decide to change the name and it takes the VA, even if they do it promptly, which they clearly didn't do here, but even if they do it promptly and it takes them a couple of years to go through notice and comment to update the name, the people in that 2-year period will somehow now not be included in the other category because they were under a different name. Isn't that the logic of your argument?
That is, Your Honor, but it overlooks the fact that the VA, in the regulation, has many other ways of barring benefits for this particular service member's conduct or anybody else's. There's willful and persistent misconduct.
But they don't have to do that, right? I mean, if what they say is, we want to get at this category of people who essentially took plea bargains to avoid a court-martial, and we don't think they should get benefits, then they can do that, right? They don't have to go through willful misconduct. They don't have to go through any of these other ways. They can do that. That's within their regulatory discretion, right?
They can, Your Honor, with the terms of the regulation. And by retaining the undesirable discharge, if VA had said...
So I just want to make clear, because I wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand your argument. You're not saying that somehow the change from undesirable to other than honorable has changed who that group that's referring to. It's referring to the same group.
Generally speaking, yes, Your Honor.
I
think that's a correct statement. There may be some situations where that may not apply, but in a general sense, yes, that's a correct statement.
So when there's a problem with a particular veteran and they're going to be charged under some article and court-martialed, they have the opportunity to enter some sort of plea agreement to avoid that.
In some cases, yes, Your Honor.
Yes. In this case, didn't your client agree in the plea agreement that by accepting the agreement that he was going to be barred from future service benefits?
Not exactly, Your Honor. He agreed in the wording.
He had notice, right?
He had notice, Your Honor, that he may be barred from benefits. And when that's really why this case is so important, because when he was accepting...
What difference would it make if he had received notice that he would be barred, as opposed to may be barred?
Well, that may have changed or would change somebody else's decision on whether they were going to accept...
There's no argument here that the plea was accepted on the potential of being barred and not the certainty.
There's no argument, Your Honor, but the record shows that the terms of the plea agreement was that he may be barred from benefits.
But isn't that just because the military branch is not the one who makes the benefits determination?
Correct.
So they're not going to put in the plea agreement. That's left to the secretary. But I didn't see that you were arguing this as a lack of notice or confusion. Because I think to do that, you would have to show that there was some change in the group or the composition of the group, or that people didn't understand these to be equivalent. But from my reading of everything that's going on here, including all the comments to the proposed new regulation, when they refer to this, everybody assumes and agrees that this is the same group of people. It's people who accept a plea agreement in lieu of a court-martial. And it changed the characterization from undesirable to under other than honorable in the 70s. And there's probably a lot of reasons. I couldn't dig down far enough, but I'm guessing that it was probably wrapped up in the whole Vietnam era and the way you term people who went AWOL or deserted and all the pardons. There's a whole long, complicated history. Maybe you can help me on that. But it's not a change in the group. It's a change in the name.
It's not, Your Honor, but as you mentioned...
Let me just to back up one more statement. You're not suggesting that your client entered into this plea agreement under some misapprehension of what could happen to him under this regulation, just because it had a different name.
To start, Your Honor, the record, you know, we can't argue facts or facts to law here. So we're stuck with the record as it is. As far as what was argued at the Veterans Court, that was not argued. I can tell you, he did not understand, and he was speaking with him.
Did it hinge on, I would be very surprised to learn that it hinged on the use of the words other than honorable rather than undesirable, or rather he wasn't given full, you know, information from his defense counsel about the ramifications of this. It's probably the latter.
Most likely, yes, Your Honor. I mean, most service members don't understand what the law is, and they do rely on their attorneys. But the attorneys, of course, are looking at these regulations. They see the term undesirable discharge. They do their due diligence.
Are you suggesting that the I assume it was JAG counsel on both sides, that they didn't understand that other than honorable was the current term rather than undesirable, that it meant the same thing? I think we're going down a rabbit hole that is just wasn't argued and doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. All that happened here is the military charted using a different term. The VA, for whatever reason, took a long time and still hasn't updated it, partly probably because it's part of a very controversial regulation, not on this point, but on a lot of other points, which is my guess is why it's taken, you know, since 2020 and they still haven't finalized things. I mean, I assume you read all the comments. I mean, there are even comments directed at this particular thing and suggesting that there shouldn't be a regulatory bar to take people who take plea agreements. But aren't you focusing on just the isolated part of this, the undesirable language, rather than the full phrase and what the full phrase means? And did VA apply the full phrase properly? Because it's the in lieu of court-martial part that stayed the same. And that's really what we're talking about. People who accept discharges in lieu of court-martials, whether it's termed undesirable or other than honorable.
And had the VA said a discharge in lieu of a court-martial, I would agree with you, Your Honor. But they did not. They used a very specific term that had a very specific meaning, an undesirable discharge. Now, whether
it still has the same meaning.
It does not, Your Honor, because there were other types of discharge.
It has the same meaning for this group, people that accept a plea agreement in lieu of discharge. There are other types of discharges, sure, but nobody's suggesting that undesirable in lieu of discharge refer to those. It's undesirable in lieu of discharge, other than honorable. I think you agreed. This is the same group of people.
It is in the global sense, Your Honor, but again, we have to interpret the words that the VA used. And we have to recognize...
VA didn't use these words. The military branches use these words, and they're the ones that changed it.
Yes.
VA hasn't caught up.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's the thrust of our argument, is that they failed to do
so. How is the logic of that, I mean, even rational? Because VA is never going to... If the Air Force decides we're going to change from undesirable to honorable, VA is, logistically, there is no way they can do this in less than, you know, a year probably. So everybody during that year that accepted a plea marshal gets a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Not no necessarily, pun. Your Honor. I disagree with that. Under this provision would not apply, but there are other provisions.
But in the statute suggests that the VA, you know, can't continue to bar people that are in the same group, even though the military has changed the name.
Nothing in the statute, Your Honor, but the regulation is very clear and uses a very specific word. And we have to interpret the words used. We can't reimagine what the regulation should say, we have to use what the VA said. And again, if they had used the term any discharge...
Why is it reimagining? It's referring to the same group that everybody understands to be the same group of people. There's not a single commenter that I could find in the comments on the proposed regulation that found any confusion in the change in terminology. Can you point to any confusion? You're just making a technical argument, right? They changed the name so it no longer applies.
That's correct, Your Honor, because that discharge
and the logic, but then that leads to the absurd results that for however long it takes VA to catch up, they can no longer use this bar, even though they intend this bar to apply to the same class of people that the terminology is referring to.
They can't use this provision, Your Honor. There are other provisions that are available, willful and persistent misconduct, and any number of the other provisions in 3.12, which would allow the VA to bar benefits for this conduct or any similar conduct. And so by using this specific provision for a discharge that does not exist, the VA has to can't be allowed to redefine a term
point right there is where you're seeking relief. And when I read through the papers and I'm looking as to what remedy you want, it just seems to me that it's a remedy that we cannot give you. We cannot rewrite or write or promulgate the regulation that you're talking about. That's got to be done by the VA, or if you're talking about the statute, that has to be Congress. But you're asking us to rewrite the regulation, it appears.
No, Your Honor. The Veterans Court rewrote the regulation, and the VA has attempted to rewrite the regulation by turning an undesirable discharge into something else. What we're asking is that the court read and interpret the words.
Are you really saying turning it into something else, or are you just saying renaming it, which is really what happened?
I think both, Your Honor, but in order to rename it, they must go through the proper procedures in the Administrative Procedures Act and through notice and comment, which they're in the process of doing, as you mentioned. And they have not done that, and it's been 50 plus years now, or nearly 50 years now, and they just got around to it within the last couple years.
Counsel, I share Judge Hughes' concerns, but I also want to ask about, even if we were to agree with you, I guess that the regulation, and referring to undesirable discharge, you want us to change that or understand that to be limited to something that no longer exists in that name. But is that consistent with the statute? I'm just a little concerned about if we were to accept that interpretation. Wouldn't that be inconsistent with the statute that very clearly defines a veteran for purposes of veterans' benefits as a person who is discharged or released therefrom under conditions other than dishonorable? Why doesn't that statute itself, which the regulation purports to implement, prohibit the interpretation that you're now seeking?
Because, Your Honor, the regulation, well, first, the statute does not define what that term means. And the regulation...
But historically, that term has been understood to mean somebody who hasn't accepted a plea bargain to avoid trial by general court-martial.
True, Your Honor, but the VA, I urge the court to really focus on the actual words that the VA used. If they had used a more broad term, like a discharge in lieu of a general court-martial, we would not be here and Mr. Cranford would be out of luck. But they specifically define... discharge under...
No, we would be here on a different argument from you, which is the military aren't discharging people in lieu of court-martial. They're discharging them under other than honorable conditions, or that a discharge in lieu of court-martial doesn't fall within the statute because it's not other than honorable. I mean, this is the problem. You want to elevate it and say, well, they should have used a more general term, but they get to pick the terminology, and as long as everybody understands what class of people they're intending to exclude, then why isn't that good enough?
Again, Your Honor, they used a very specific word that has a very specific meaning.
I mean, but it's the military branches that use the terminology, not the VA. If the VA used the term that you suggested that doesn't match up with any of the military's terminology, then you, under your technical argument, they wouldn't fall within either, right? So just give you that example. If it says, if they said we exclude people who were discharged in lieu of a court-martial, and the military says they're, because they're the ones that control the DD-214s, right? And they say they were other than honorably discharged in lieu of court-martial. If we're looking at the specific names, those are different names, right?
I would not press that argument, Your Honor.
Oh, I bet you would.
I would, well, I would not. A discharge is a discharge. And if,
but
if
it's the, not. In fact, that's the whole point of this. A discharge can be honorable. It can be general. It can be other than honorable. It can be a bad conduct discharge, or it can be dishonorable discharge. That's why we're in this whole area. And some of them qualify you. I think the first two. The middle two are ambiguous depending on the regulatory, or the middle one. And then it's the bottom two that disqualify you. So a discharge is not a discharge. We have to look at exactly what it was to be intended to, the group that it's intended to apply to, and whether the VA thinks that kind of discharge is a regulatory bar or not.
Yes, Your Honor. But again, had they instead looked at another provision.
I'm just asking what, not going to other parts, because they're certainly not forced to go to other parts.
No.
What could they have done to, if the military changes its definition, it's not definition, its name. All it does is change the name. Doesn't change the content of the group. What could they have done so that there was no gap in coverage under your argument?
Without going to another provision, Your Honor.
Without going to another provision.
Well, in that scenario, nothing. But again, they look again at the conduct of the former service member at the time of discharge and what led to that discharge. And if another provision applies, they would be allowed to bar the benefits. The secretary has a lot of leeway in determining whether a regulatory bar exists or not. They have an entire regulation with multiple subsections that could perceivably encounter any situation that they would be faced with. But the fact of the matter is that the undesirable discharge does not exist. The VA waited 40 plus years to amend it or attempt to amend it. And instead what they've done is they've attempted to amend it using the M21 provision.
Anybody that accepted a discharge in lieu of a court-martial from 1975 to present is now eligible for veterans benefits and will continue to be eligible until VA finishes this regulation. So almost 50 years of people who everybody understood shouldn't get benefits will, based on your legal argument, now get benefits.
No, Your Honor. Because again, they can still...
No. Not, I don't want to hear about the other regulations. Under this regulation...
This regulation would not apply to
even
any of them.
Even though VA clearly intended people who took a plea agreement in lieu of a court-martial not to get benefits.
Yes, Your Honor. Because they failed to update the regulation.
You're out of time. I'll restore your 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you,
Mr. DeHarkis. Mr. Beckridge, can you hear us and can you see us?
Yes, I can, Your Honor.
Okay, hold just a minute. Okay, you may
proceed.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Court should affirm the decision of the Veterans Court because Mr. Cranford's discharge under other than honorable conditions in lieu of trial by court-martial is considered an undesirable discharge under 38 CFR section 3.12.
Do you have any update on the proposed regulatory change? Why it's taking so long? I assume it's because the other parts of this regulation are really controversial. There are some controversial parts that VA is wading through, although this one doesn't seem to be all that controversial. Do you have any have you talked to the people at VA to see if this is going to become final anytime soon?
We have obviously discussed the proposed rule in light of this case, and I don't have an update in terms of when the proposed rule would become final, Your Honor. What I do know is that there is no disagreement about what is meant by the term undesirable discharge. And an undesirable discharge is a release from military service under conditions other than honorable. Here, Mr. Cranford was released from military service under conditions other than honorable, and thus his case falls squarely within the regulation section 3.12D. Because it falls squarely within that, that really is the end of this court's analysis, and he's barred from receiving benefits. Mr. Cranford argues that this court should apply as Judge Hughes pointed out, just a hyper-technical, in-name-only approach to what VA intended here. But there's just no support that the VA intended that a discharge carry a certain name in order for the provision to apply. In fact, what VA intended to do was decide when a discharge that was not dishonorable should be considered dishonorable, and it looks at the facts of various circumstances. Here, the particular fact is that there is a discharge in lieu of trial by court-martial. And as Your Honors pointed out, if Mr. Cranford's position is accepted, then this provision is rendered meaningless for service members who accepted discharges in lieu of court-martial for the past almost 50 years. And that would be the case when really there's no disagreement among courts or among, as Your Honor pointed out, among commenters about what is meant by the term undesirable discharge. I think it's helpful for the court to look at the Camarena versus Brown case cited by the Veterans Court, and that was a case affirmed by this court. There, the court explored the intent of the regulation and it said that the intent was to give the secretary discretion about when to deny benefits when the discharge was given for conduct less than honorable. Again, the purpose is to look at the specific circumstances. Here, the relevant provision is in lieu of trial by court-martial, and determine whether or not that should be considered dishonorable. The secretary applied that straightforward provision in this case, and really that, as I mentioned, that is the end of this court's analysis, and the court should affirm the Veterans Court. Although I don't think it's necessary for this court to reach the issue of deference, I'll quickly address that because we did speak to it in the brief.
Can I ask you, do you think that the difference in names is what makes it potentially ambiguous? If we find the intent of the regulation to point to a certain group is plain, is the change in names enough to render it ambiguous, or is it really the intent of the regulation and the language used there?
I don't think that the change in name makes it ambiguous, just because there's really no question. I mean, nobody has questioned for the past 46 years what the meaning of undesirable discharge is, and that is a discharge under conditions other than honorable. So I don't think that the change in name creates any sort of ambiguity here.
If we had to get to Auer, which was where you were going, what qualifies under Kaiser as the authoritative VA interpretation?
Yeah, Your Honor, I would like to address that. I think that we have a couple of things. I think that we can look at the adjudication procedures manual, the M21, in which sets forth in very plain terms that an undesirable discharge is called a discharge under conditions other than honorable. And then we also, that position is reaffirmed by the fact of the proposed rule. The proposed rule sets forth that there is no substantive change from undesirable discharge to the new proposed language, but it's just updating it to match the language used by the military services.
Do you have legal support for the idea that a proposed rule can be a definitive interpretation under Kaiser?
Your Honor, I don't, and just to be clear, I'm not actually proposing that is the definitive interpretation. That is the basis for the definitive interpretation. I think it just adds further support to the adjudication procedures manual. I believe that the manual itself would be the the decisive position of the Secretary. And certainly, Your Honor, this is a matter that falls within the expertise of VA and of the Secretary. This is a matter of veterans' benefits, and specifically a matter of when a discharge should be considered dishonorable for the purposes of determining VA benefits. And as we pointed out in the brief, the Veterans Court hasn't struggled to interpret this. To our knowledge, there hasn't been any debate over what undesirable discharge means. So we certainly think that Mr. Cranford was aware, or should have been aware, of the meaning of the term whenever he entered into his agreement. If your honors have no further questions, I'll yield the rest of my time to you.
Okay, we thank you much, sir. I think we have it, so let's go hear back from Mr. Dohakis, who has 3 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Bickridge.
Just a couple points, Your Honor. Number one, 101 defines a veteran as one discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable, and 3.12d defines very specifically, again, that a discharge for one of these offenses shall be considered having been issued under dishonorable conditions, and then it lists undesirable discharge. So to the point that Judge Hughes was making, and again, we cannot ignore that there are other tools for the VA to bar benefits for these folks who were discharged under these types of circumstances. Just not this one until the VA changes its regulation. And touching on Camara, that case was specific about willful and persistent misconduct, so I would argue it does not apply to this case. And the statement that the VA has always interpreted this way should be read as dicta, as are the other two cases that were cited by the government. And on last point, the issue of ambiguity was raised. I would urge, number one, that there is no authoritative interpretation from the VA should the court determine that there is ambiguity.
Why isn't the M21 authoritative?
The M21 is not authoritative, Your Honor, because as Kaiser tells us, it must come through the actors, through the methods, through the vehicles that are known to produce authoritative policy.
I mean, but didn't we just find en banc that the M21 is substantive enough that you can file a petition for a review challenging a provision? That sounds like it's pretty authoritative to me.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's assuming that it has gone. It can be challenged, but when it does not follow the proper notice and comment procedures, then it can be invalidated by the court.
Are you suggesting that the only thing that can get our deference is notice and comment rulemaking?
No, Your Honor.
Because if it's notice and comment rulemaking, it's not our, it's Chevron.
No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that the M21, for a number of reasons, cannot be authoritative. And as the court pointed out in, I think it was DAV, that it can change pretty much at will. Any person can
make the
changes.
But it's binding on the regional office adjudicators.
It is, but it's not binding on the board, Your Honor.
But we still found that was sufficient to make it a rule or regular of the type that's referenced in 502, sufficient for review. I'm having a hard time to find if it's sufficient for review under 502, how it's not an authoritative interpretation of the Secretary. Because 502 only allows you to challenge authoritative interpretations of the Secretary.
That's true, Your Honor, but because it can change and other folks at the VBA, not the Secretary, can change it pretty much, and it changes on a weekly basis, that it's difficult to allow the M21 to be an authoritative interpretation that falls within the concept of Kaiser.
So you all can file 502 petitions against it, but the VA can't rely on it under our.
In most cases, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And so in conclusion, I would ask that the court narrowly interpret an undesirable discharge to mean what it was when VA promulgated the regulation, and reverse the Veterans Court.
Thank you, Mr. Dohakis. We thank the parties for their arguments this morning. That concludes our hearing.